This is Forum. I'm John Michaels, Public Affairs Radio Director, with the old friend of KELO, back when it was just even AM, before FM almost.
Yeah.
Austin Harris was your radio name.
Yeah.
And we can say now Austin Vanderzee.
Yeah. Legal name.
Yeah, is your real name. It's kind of like people in radio, they switch names around a little bit. How did you come up with Harris? Was there a Harley Borthwick do that?
Actually not. Most people that worked with Harley. And by the way, hello, John. It's great to see you and reconnect with you. And thank you for having me on the program. And every time I see you now, it just brings back so many memories of us working together. And for you to have me here, I really is a privilege and an honor. So anyway, let me tell you what happened. Back in 1972, when I was taking to the airwaves, 17 years old, up in Watertown, South Dakota, the program director there said most radio guys will use a pseudonym, and that's to kind of protect your identity and everything like that. So I was going through the Watertown annual, and I ran across a guy named Kenny Harris. And Harris, it just seemed to kind of, my real name is Austin, kind of flowed off my tongue, and I just picked it up. He was a graduate of Watertown, I believe, in 1968. And so people ask, well, where'd you get that name? Did Harley? No, I just, Austin Harris. I've had it for, well, how many? I can't do the math. 42 years?
Well, you're known in Texas and some other car dealerships as a different name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a different story, which we'll talk about here in a bit. But yeah, I played so many characters and some characters that people have no clue. But back in the early 80s, mid 80s, there was a car dealership because of the radio things I did in the commercials. They came up with a character we designed called Sunny Hill. And that was in Kansas City, also in Texas and some of the other places. The name was Sunny Hill. They spent literally millions, not thousands, millions of dollars promoting me. I did celebrity.
We got to talk in his voice.
What's that? Sonny Hill, he talks sort of like that. He's from Missouri, not a whole lot of accent, not that real Texas drawl, but just enough to tell people, come here, and if you like the car, you know, I'll help you test drive it, and you can buy it from me. I'm Sonny Hill, and I live right by that Platte City water tower. And that's what I'd say. There was a water tower on the dealership grounds, and people thought I was from there. And, of course, I was from, you know, little old T, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Back now, I've moved to T, but back then I lived in Sioux Falls, so.
Well, you are in quite a few commercials. People hear your voice quite a bit on television and production right now.
Yeah, and I do different voices. I've done, I'm working now with the Billion Corporation, but back then it used to be Larry and Barry, Frank Stinson, just before, you know, right after Jay Sean took it over. And so a lot of the hearts still sell stuff for Lithia and Stinson and then Schulte, and then, you know, played, hi there, Larry and Barry, you know, hi, boy, I'm, you know, got to do those voices. And
you were both Larry and Barry.
I was both. And, you know, we had a really sweet lady at church that could not understand. She said, it's really nice that your cousin helps you on those commercials. And I said, Kathleen, it's not my cousin, it's me.
Uh-huh. Well, your cousin does a really nice job, and you tell him hello.
Well, okay. She was like 93, had no clue how you were to green screen. And I was kind of doing that ahead of myself, you know, ahead of the times, maybe back in the 80s. 1984, Larry and Barry debuted. So that's been almost 30 years.
Time does fly. Well,
yeah.
The reason you're here is you've got something covered, a book that you wrote.
Yeah, well, thank you for asking. You know, God has given me, and I give him the credit, just a few, you know, to be good at a few things and not great at anything. But some of my talents have been able to communicate, and I one time was writing some things down, and some other people said, you know, you have a pretty good talent for writing. And I thought, well, you know, I'd like to write. Well, so I write. I've actually written some screenplays, some sitcoms, none of which has been published or read other than by my wife, who says, oh, that's nice, dear, pass the salt. But other than that, I sat down, and I had this idea that I was going to write some books on parenting. I really felt like the Lord had blessed me to be a successful parent, however you define that. And we could talk about that if you want to. But with my two children raising them, I've just had a heart for parenting and trying to be a good dad and trying to be a good father. As you know, there's a great need. There's a lot of fatherlessness in America. So having said that, I was thinking of my own childhood, my own upbringing. My real father was married 5 times. He was, for all intents and purposes, to define it, he was an alcoholic. He left when I was an infant. We moved back to Watertown, back from Indiana. And I grew up with, politically correct, I'm not sure, but I called him my stepfather. I did call him dad. I called him my father. Some people don't like that word, but he decided to take over the reins, my sister and I. He had 7 children of his own, so I come from a family of 9. He was a World War II veteran. How does this rely on, or how does this relate to writing? As I was writing about parenting, things like that, I came across the idea that my father, being a World War II veteran who had seen the Holocaust firsthand, helped liberate Dachau, one of the death camps of the hundreds that Hitler had set up. I thought of him in Normandy and the job he did and the military thing, and I put together this story which reflects some of the idea of honor and country and tradition. And the book is based upon an incident. It's called Friendly Fire. And I authored it, and my wife said, you should write a book about some of those things. So what I did, I basically wrote a story of redemption, but I used some of the characters. In fact, if you look at the book here, that is my daughter on the cover. She's 27. She saw the cover and said, "Dad, why is my head by a 50 caliber sniper rifle?" And she said that, and I'm smiling. And I said, "Well, honey, you got to read the book. It relates to this young lady and the characters in the book as to this redemption story." But what happened, John, is you know the term friendly fire? Do you understand
what
that is? Yes. And Pat Tillman, of course, really brought this idea, but it happens all the time.
It's not friendly.
It's not friendly, that's correct, but it happens all the time. And in doing my research for the book and in wanting to articulate some of the story of redemption that I really the Lord kind of gave me on my heart to write, I came up with a lot of historical references, and I found out just how some of these situations had been, I don't want to say hidden, but just not brought to light. It's a terrible tragedy to be killed in any situation. I remember standing at the Sioux Falls Airport, I think a year ago, and I was saying goodbye to my sister. Excuse me. I was saying goodbye to my daughter. I was there with my sister and my wife and so on. And there was a lady holding a wooden casket. I didn't know it was a casket at the time, but it had the American flag and some other things. And they were really, you know, helping her. She was crying. Her father was there. And I went ahead and asked the question. I said, what's this all about? Well, her brother had died in combat. But the thing was, it was an accident. It wasn't combat itself. It wasn't a bullet from an enemy. He had just died. But at the time, he was serving our country. And so he was treated with full military honors and so on and so forth. And it just struck me at the code of conduct in the military. I was drafted in 1973, just as the war was ending in Vietnam. I never got to serve. I never had that opportunity. And looking back on my stepfather who'd served in Normandy, I wanted to write this story about friendly fire, a story that is based on actual events, but is not necessarily true. The characters are made up. But the story itself is a story of redemption, a story of one man who makes a mistake and then tries to recover from it and gets rid of what I think is the greatest roadblock to people who cannot forgive themselves, and that's guilt. So the journey in this book is, how does he get through this mistake he made? And in the end, how is he able to hurdle that last remaining challenge? Everybody else has forgiven him, so on and so forth. And I don't want to give away the story, but guilt has gotten in his way. And that's what this story is about.
Survivor's guilt.
Survivor's guilt. Exactly. Very good. Very well put. In fact, I don't use that phrase in here, but could have been.
Probably a little bit of PTSD.
Perhaps, and to be honest, I'm not familiar with the clinical diagnosis of that, but there could have been.
It'd be a good book for people that are veterans to read.
Yeah. One thing about the book, and thank you for referencing that, it's written under another pseudonym. You know, I have Austin Harris on the radio, Austin Earl Vanderzee. My real name is Austin Earl Vanderzee. I decided to use this name, Austin Earl, as the author. So if you were to go to Austin Earl Books, which I don't have, the website's not up yet, but on Amazon, the book sells for $450 a copy. No, I'm kidding. I think it's under 10 bucks right now. And there's a Kindle version also, but it's called Friendly Fire by Austin Earle. And if you looked up Friendly Fire by Austin Earle, you could buy the book.
That's E-A-R-L?
E-A-R-L. It's actually, you know, Austin, I've had that, and I tell people when I'm going to have a birthday, I never say how old I am. I always say how old I'm going to be. So the day after I'm 59, if you would have asked me, how old are you? I would say, well, I'm going to be 60. Oh, okay, cool. You know, so that's what I say to people, because on October 9th, I turned 59. I'm leaning on 60 years old, John.
I actually thought I was a year older than I actually was by doing that once.
It gets you ready. It helps you. It helps you. But my real name is Austin. Okay, my real father, my biological father, who lives in Monticello, Indiana, who is still alive, 84, just had a birthday on the 15th of December, his name is Austin. So we've had that name in the family for many years. Earl was my grandfather's name, who passed away in the 70s. And so Austin Earl is my legal name, and I'm using that as an author in this book called Friendly Fire.
Just Google Austin Friendly Fire, it'll come up.
I think so. I don't know. I have never Googled it. In fact, I can't tell you how many copies I've sold, but it's probably less than would pay the parking ticket that I may be getting right now out in the front.
Well, you're not going to get a parking ticket because we're recording this on the weekend.
Oh, that's right.
But it's a soft cover. Now, some of the other things that you wrote evidently kind of led up to this a little bit, but Tell us about your daughter, what she thinks about being, you know, part of the base on this book. And you know, she's kind of a generation past.
Right.
Where are you drawing this from?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, let me say something real quick about my kids. You know, every father who's, you know, in a way proud of their children, how they've turned out. I don't know what success is and how other people define it, because it's what I learned in debate is you have to define terms first. So I'll just use these terms and let other people fill in the blanks. But I feel like I was a successful father. I was able to get my children to understand there's more to life than just things. And they were raised in a Christian environment. My wife was, I believe, you know, the best mother any child could have. She was fortunately able to stay at home. I had an income that allowed her to do that, whether that's good or bad. It sure worked out for us. My daughter was very bright. My son was very bright. Make a long story short, both are doing right now very successful careers. My son is the worship and art director at Quail Springs Church of Christ down in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. His first job out of college, doing very well in music ministry. Just finished a CD, went to Nashville, did some recording, has a brand new CD out called On the Low Sky by Brett Vanderzee. My daughter, at age 22, right out of college, went up and took 6 internships in and out of Oklahoma and New York. She wanted to be a fashion magazine graphic design artist, wanted to work with 17 Magazine, ended up at Harper's Bazaar. So she's right now currently, I think she's one of the art directors. I don't know her actual title, but every magazine of Harper's Bazaar magazine, she's in it, Amber Vanderzee, and you can find her name in the magazine. She's 27 now, been there 5 years.
They were went to Sioux Falls Christian High School?
Went to Sioux Falls Christian High School. They went to private school their whole life. Started over Christian Center Elementary and did quite well and were involved in a lot of things. But they're doing what they want to do. They're following their passion, following their dreams. And they're happy every time they wake up at doing what they want to do. Maybe not getting paid them as what they want to be paid, as all of us are, but I believe they're doing well. And they're living the kind of life, I think, that has a view of the life to come and not just living for the moment.
Any grandkids yet?
No grandchildren, and I'm not allowed to push that. I was told early on, my son got married before my daughter. He's 24. My daughter's 27. And Brett got married, a cute story. He decided he wasn't going to date all through high school. Wanted to live he said, Dad, everybody in high school, they go steady, have crushes, and then they break up and they're not friends anymore. I'm not going to do that. Gets to college and says, I'm not going to date in college. I'm going to get my degree, so on and so forth. Well, that lasted about 2 weeks. He ran into a girl named Lara Bowles. Spells it Laura, but it's pronounced Lara. Absolutely beautiful inside and out, inside first, and boom, it was over. He came home on November 24th of about 3 years ago and said, Mom and Dad, I gave away my first kiss, and I looked at my wife and I said, it's over.
Yeah.
It's done. August 6th of that senior year, he got married in college, right before his senior year, and they've been married now, this next year will be 3 years, but anyway, that was the long answer to, any grandkids? No.
Let's go back to, you said you went into military back in 73. That's when I was just getting out. But what did you do in the military?
Well, I didn't get into the military.
Oh, okay.
I was drafted, and I was going down to, I don't know what you call that. I had to sign the papers and the whole deal, and the war ended. I literally was shut down like the week I was going in there. And I think they told me my draft number, and I honestly remember, and I think it was, I don't know if it's low or high, but it was like 36, and somebody said, oh, you're going. Anything in the top 100, you guys are going to Nam. And I had friends that fought in the Vietnam War, and so I was thinking, oh, boy. And some of those guys did not come home, and those were the real heroes of any war.
Well, of course, you came over to KELO Radio.
Yes.
At that time.
Yes.
And people remember probably the voice, even still Austin Harris.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was back in almost before FM.
It was. when Harley, yes, Worthit, God bless him, was trying to do things with AM radio that had never been done, with AM stereo, trying to make it sound better, and here comes FM, it just blows us away.
Are you the one at Harley chased down in the alley with a car, or was that
do I get to tell that?
Yes.
Oh, no. What if he hears
it? Statute of limitations has passed on it.
No, I'm the one that took the place of the man he did try to run over in the alley. Yes. I actually wrote Harley Worthit a letter, and I'll share this. I've never shared this stuff, so I'll share it for what it's worth if it's interesting. I had, maybe at the time, we'll call it an ego. I call it a godfidence, not confidence. I had a godfidence in the abilities God had given me. I knew I could do radio. I had a great face for radio. And there's a joke in there somewhere. And I just remember saying, oh, you'll never get into radio. You don't have any experience. But at age 17, I went down, and 3 weeks later, I was full-time. And then what happened was there were some changes in the Watertown broadcasting up there at KSDR. And I didn't like them. And I just said, you know, and they said, well, that's tough. You either stay on board or leave. Well, I wrote Harley Worth a letter and I said, Harley, I'm coming to Sioux Falls and I'm going to try to be the number one announcer in Sioux Falls. And I said, you can either work for me or against me. And he said, I never forgot that. He said, I hired you 2 weeks later. And that's what he told me. He said, my confidence and the way I attacked the idea that I was passionate and I was going to do what I said I was going to do, he hired me. Well, anyway, what happened was I left KELO Radio, Super K, and at the time we were doing this, Harley didn't like it. And Harley, you know, to be honest, and I'll go ahead and tell it, he kind of lost his temper, and he ended up kicking me in the leg in the studio. I fell to the ground. I thought, you know, I'd never been kicked in the leg before at work. And, you know, poor Harley. Harley, forgive me if you ever hear this, because I have forgiven him and we've become great friends. But having said that, when I was kicked, I didn't see it coming. So when I was kicked, my head was telling me, what happened? My leg just exploded. And so I was thinking, my leg just exploded. I hit the ground. I turn around. There's Harley. And he says, nobody quits me during the book. You know, we were going through the Arbitron Spring book. And, of course, I was a little upset. Ended up, we were going to go to blows. Fortunately, there was no physical violence because I know it would have killed him. But Neil Schertz came in and Jim Alhan, some old names from the past, and we resolved all that. And I came back to work for him 6 months later.
You worked for me for a while.
I did.
We called it Disco on Wheels.
Disco on Wheels.
And I used every time you did a high school dance, we'd get fan mail.
Oh, wow. I don't remember that.
People send, you know, girls sending their pictures with a letter and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, man. I don't remember hardly any of that. I wish I had those now. Oh, we had a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah, the 70s, mid-70s, late-70s was a good time.
It was a good time. Now, you know, I don't know if you're aware of, because I didn't know what else. You know, I'm still doing a radio show on some other networks. I'm doing about 80 affiliates. I haven't kept track, but it's called The Beacon.
How many states are you in?
Actually, about 28 states now. It airs on Sunday morning, and none of it on Christian radio, which is kind of cool. It's a spiritual program. We weave a spiritual message through the program, but it's all secular music. You know, Sarah McLachlan and Eric Clapton, and also have a country version, and I produce that show myself in my home, and it's a six-hour show, 2 6-hour shows I produce every week.
So you're still in radio.
Still doing radio.
You're doing production. You're writing books.
Yeah.
Tell us about the other things you've written that you kind of touched on a little bit. You got a screenplay?
I have a screenplay. I have seven, and I'm about writing. In fact, one of them, because I enjoyed it so much, I turned it into another book, and that's going to be the release of my second book coming out, I hope, in the spring of 2014. It's called No Returns. Do you want to hear a little bit about that?
You bet.
Well, basically, it's about the idea, and I'm going to give this away, but it's really a funny thing. In fact, I saw an episode on a sitcom after I wrote the book, and I thought, shoot, this kind of ruins the newness of it. They're going to think I stole this idea, but what it is about a guy who's kind of a young, 20-something guy who has, because of the fact that his parents had a little money and his grandmother left him a house, he's never had to buy anything on his own, really. And so when it comes to high-ticket items, he never pays for them. What he does, he borrows them or uses them based on return policies, and then when the 90 days are up or the 60 days are up, he takes them back. And he saves more just spending gas taking things back than buying brand-new furniture, buying a brand-new big-screen TV. His house is filled with nothing but things with tags on them. His clothes he buys, if it's a formal thing, and he takes it back. It's called No Returns. Well, he gets involved in a relationship. The girl finds out about this. Some things happen. But it's a comedy called No Returns. I'm going to release it in the spring. And I hope it's going to do better even than this book, because it's more, a little more of my personality coming out in that book. And it's fun. It's much more fun to write a comedy it is than to write a story about redemption.
Have you thought about retiring? You're doing everything that you love.
Yeah.
Retirement really isn't in your plan, I don't think, for a while.
No, I don't even know. How do you spell that word?
Yeah.
You know, I've been fortunate enough to, and you know this, if the Lord's willing to let my heart continue to beat, I'm going to continue to do what I call, and I've never referred to it. I have, if people have asked me, but I always tell my children, because of what I do, I never refer to what I do and how I've been able to have a 42-year career in broadcasting and voiceovers as work. I've always said I have a job. It's never really been work to me. Let me share one thing. I have in my office very few things, but one of the things I hold up and keep is a file of the toughest job, I think, in the world, and it's the most dangerous, and it's working in the Chinese coal mine. Chinese coal miners, it's a coveted job, but 20 people a day die in the Chinese coal mines because of lack of intervention, a lack of preparation and regulations and policies. And people love it because they get paid, but because of their government, because of those things, it's a very, I don't ever work in a Chinese coal mine and never will. And I, every day I go to work, I'm so thankful and grateful to God that I've been able to use my voice to his credit and glory and honor. That's the most important thing for me.
What can you say to, you know, a lot of people when they get towards retirement, they say, well, I'm going to write a novel.
Yes.
Okay, how do you do that?
Okay, that is a great question. I'm going to answer it first by saying, you do it. I, for many years, said I was going to do something, and I didn't do it. I have taken a different... Now, I want to stay more focused. I was one of those guys that had been, what do they say, what's that word about something about a trade and a master of none? What? How does that go?
Jack of all...
Yes. Yeah. Jack of all trades.
Yeah, jack of all trades and a master of none.
And a master of none. And that was sort of me in a nutshell. I would do anything or try. Let me try that. Can I do that? Is that human? I'll try that. I want to be an NBA player. I'm going to play basketball. So I took off in all these tangents. And then I, because of my personality being given sort of a creative personality, and the psychology side of me said, Austin, you need to focus on what you can do best. Stay focused in those areas. And then produce. So you asked me, the short answer is do it. You know, I am grateful that, I don't know how great this book will turn out, and I don't know the other books. The best books, I think, are coming. And I want them to be about how to raise a child, how to raise a boy to maturity, how to give him a blessing, how to make him a man besides the brawn and the biceps and the brains, how to make your daughter the real princess of your life, how to be there for her dentist appointments and yet not suffer because of what you do for a living. So those books are coming, and I'm hoping to get those out. But you asked about retirement. In this business, if my vocal cords, you know, stay busy, I'll be able to go to who knows when. It's just whether or not the heartbeat continues, and that's up to God. That's his choice.
So how do you formulate? How do you start the book? Getting started is probably the hardest part.
Yeah, you know, I call it, I have my own process, and I'm sure it goes along with other people, but I call it kind of the bare bones put on the meat, and that's where I take a skeleton, and I write down the trigger words of what I want to do and what is the purpose and the goal. And it's sort of like writing a song, because, by the way, I write a lot of songs. I've written over 250 songs probably, most of them country. I love writing country. I love every kind of music except certain rap music because it's less more talk and less music. But having said that, I like to write, and I'll write down a certain thought. What's the thought? What's going to be the goal? And then I'll bring it about as to how do I get there? What's going to be the journey? And so I might write down three things. I might write down eight. And then I say, okay, I'm going to cover those things as I get to the bridge and the chorus and the climax. And that's kind of the way I handle books. I put the meat on the bones and tell that story. And along the way, I like to throw in parables. I believe the greatest teacher ever was Jesus. And what he did was he said, here, let me tell you a story. And then when he was done and he had your attention, he'd say, now, let me tell you how that applies. And he did it. It says, the Bible says, he never spoke without telling first a parable. That's in every Bible. Look it up. He never spoke without telling his disciples first a parable. And he would talk about the trees and the mustard seed. And he would talk about the parable of the sower. And he would talk about whatever parables he told. And then he would say, now, here's what I want you to learn from it. That's what I want my books to do.
This would be a good book for a daughter to buy for their father for Christmas?
Or? Absolutely. Let me share with you, rather than talk Christian philosophy or what's right or wrong, I don't want to get off on that, but I do want to say this. For me, if I'm going to write a book that could be considered Christian fiction, it can't contain things that are inappropriate. And so I do use the word butt. There's a sergeant that says, I want you to get your butt over that thing. That's the worst word you'll hear in this book. And maybe I should have taken that out.
No buts about it.
No buts about it. But yeah, it's a story that now it involves some death. It involves some carnage. But I think I handle that subject in an appropriate way. Now you think, wait a minute. It's a book about death. It certainly can't be uplifting. Well, it's like anything else. When you get to redemption, there's humor, there's flashbacks, there's things that I think will hopefully do well. Let me share something about the book. Do I have time?
You bet.
Okay. A neat thing, and you can be hoping for this or praying for this, is I have a connection. And I won't give the name of the connection, but it's a pretty doggone big connection. And it also is a Hollywood connection. And I just got wind a couple of days ago. The guy said, here, this is the guy. He's my friend. He's my business partner. Take your book, Austin. Here's his address. This is his wife, who's also involved in television and Hollywood. And you send them that book and tell him I recommended. And if he likes the book, there's a chance he'll either do a television documentary or he'll do a movie with it. And I just said, okay, mm-hmm. you know. And so I'm in the process of doing that. I'm going to actually try to overnight it before Christmas.
You're doing a screenplay of your book already.
I'm going to let him see the book, mm-hmm. and then if he wants to, he's going to invite some screenplay writers to come together and say, you know what we'll do? Let's take the dialogue from this book, and let's turn this into a movie. So there is a chance that this book, it's really not a slim chance, it's a pretty good chance. So I'm really hoping that'll happen.
And it's basically in the Vietnam era or the World War II?
This is actually based on the current era, 2013.
Okay.
That's when it took place. But it has flashbacks because of his grandfather and his father. His grandfather fought in Normandy. His father fought in the Vietnam War.
So it'd be a good book for grandparents, too.
Absolutely, yeah. And it covers, you know, most of the ideas of honor and of country and of family and of God. It's one of those. But again, I what I like about it is I think it speaks to the idea of redemption, and it's definitely got kind of a Christian theme. So if you're opposed to that kind of a book, don't pick it up. But if you like something that's safe that you could give to any child or teenager or an adult, Friendly Fire by Austin Earle at Amazon.com.
Did it just come out?
It just came out. Actually, I wrote it in June. I put it on Amazon, and Amazon started to do, and I love Amazon, but let me say, I couldn't, because I'm not as tech savvy as I thought I was, trying to post it up there and everything. They got the cover wrong. They got some of the uploading was wrong. And I'm getting used to some of that tech stuff. So it wasn't ready to go be purchased. So I didn't drive anybody to the website. I didn't tell anybody about it. And then about a week ago, everything was kind of ironed out. And so I've been telling people now I'm going to start a marketing campaign right after the first of the year and try to get the book well known.
If you need some help with tech support, just ask any 8-year-old. They're born with it.
Oh, my goodness. Can you believe it? I'm okay, but I'm nowhere near what my kids can do when they get on that thing, the World Wide Web. By the way, I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on Twitter. And I'm being accosted for it. So at some point, I have to have a Facebook presence and a Twitter presence, and I'm planning on doing that. But for now, I'm just out in the dark in the caves.
Austin Earle Vanderzee.
Yes.
Was Austin Harris on the radio. Do you still use that name on your other programs?
I do. On the Beacon program, mm-hmm. it's Austin Harris. And there's really no any more protection. You know I have enemies, all of us do, and of course, you know how to react to those enemies. We love them. But I've always been the kind of person that doesn't want to create enemies. I've tried to be a peacemaker. But when you stand for certain things or you uphold certain things, you're just going to make enemies along the way. And that's life, you know? But it's how you deal with that. And so as I've gone through life, I'm not trying to protect myself or my identity. If you want to know where I am and find out where I live and all that stuff, you can find out. So, you know, the NSA already knows, so it doesn't really matter. Yeah. But yeah, Austin Vanderzee and Austin Harris now, I do it mostly because I'm more known as a radio personality as Austin Harris.
Well, your voice, I'm sure people recognize it from commercials that, you know, especially the dealerships and that. Can you do Larry and Barry again one more time?
Yeah, it used to start out, I remember the first commercial I did was 15 seconds long, and Frank Stinson said, I don't want to do that. Those guys are too goofy. I said, Frank, trust me, we will get comments. And so I would say, hi, this is Larry.
Hi, this is Barry. Boy, come on down to Frank Stinson. Oh, we're having an arena sale.
An arena sale, that's right.
He goes, you know how much an arena costs? It costs a lot of money.
We're not selling the arena.
Well, how come it says arena sale?
And so they would go back and forth. And I kind of took it from Bullwinkle the Moon.
Rocky, yeah. Boy!
Yeah. And I stole that voice, so.
But writing a book, you describe it as writing a book is almost like a song.
It really is. It's like anything else. I think it starts with a passion for something and wanting to express yourself in ways. And I will share this with you, John. Like I said, I plan, and you know, I believe that, you know, Proverbs 16:9 says, in a man's heart, he plans the course of his life, but it's the Lord that directs his steps. I've really lived by that verse because I've told the Lord, listen, this is the direction I want to go. And if you don't want me going there, you're going to have to put up some roadblocks because this is my passion. This is what I want to do. And at this point, at age almost 60, things are doing pretty well, and I give him the credit for it.
Austin Earle is your pen name on the book Friendly Fire.
Friendly Fire.
It's about, you might say, redemption.
Yeah.
Guilt.
Overcoming guilt.
Being a father.
Yes.
And many things. We've got an author right here in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, that probably will end up making a movie out of this. So Austin Harris, Austin Vanderzee, they can go to Amazon.
Yes, and look up right Friendly now. Fire by Austin Earle. And if anybody buys it, thank you. And I hope it blesses you as much as it blessed me to write it.
Maybe someday it'll be delivered by a drone, you know. Amazon.com. But Austin, glad to hear you. You know, like I say, part of our history in radio here.
Friends for life, my friend.
you never forget. And thank you very much for being with us on Forum.